Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
I think all parents are always dealing with kids not wanting to eat things, and a great way to get over their aversions is to get them to understand food and to taste the food and to get into the kitchen and prepare all sorts of things.
Sarah Elton's new book encourages kids to do just that. She tells us what happened when she sat back and let her kids prepare sushi. Before that, Stacy Radford Vincent and her son Forrest give us some tips for inspiring the young chefs in your house. Spring planting season is here, and farmers in Colorado are working to get their irrigation networks up and running. Luke Runyon with that story. Whipping up some polenta and Brussels sprouts with Chef Daniel Orr, and then a visit to the Muddy Fork Bakery for a lesson in bread baking. Right into our food news with Luann Johnson.
A positive test for listeria has caused a nationwide recall of peanut butter, cheese spreads, dips, and salsa sold by Parker's Farm Incorporated. The Minnesota-based company voluntarily recalled products with a code date after the listeria was discovered by a state test. Affected products were sold at several retailers, including Target, Whole Foods, Costco, and Walmart stores. No illnesses have been reported in connection with the recall, but listeria poses a special problem. The incubation period for listeria can last over 2 months. Find a link to the complete list of recalled products at eartheats.org. 20 state attorneys general and the city of San Francisco took the beverage line Four Loko to task, and the result of the lawsuit was a settlement. Maker of the flavored malt beverage, Fusion Projects LLC of Chicago, promises to stop advertising its products to young people. Four Loko will also not be promoted on school or college property except at licensed retailers. While the company is paying a $400,000 fine, it has admitted no wrongdoing. Food Safety News reports that drinking one 23.5-ounce can of the original Four Loko is like consuming 5 beers and 2 cups of coffee. After the FDA threatened to remove it from the market in 2010, the maker of Four Loko changed the recipe to eliminate caffeine. And 41 states prohibit chefs and bartenders from touching food served to customers with their bare hands. California is one of the latest states to adopt this regulation, which would require restaurant workers to wear gloves or use utensils when handling ready-to-eat food. But now lawmakers are second-guessing the regulation. The Assembly Health Committee voted this week to repeal and revisit the rule. The goal of the law is to prevent the spread of foodborne illnesses, but those opposed say it undermines the sanitation practices already in place, namely washing your hands. The bare hand ban was recommended by the USDA some 20 years ago. Find links to these stories and learn more at eartheats.org. And be in touch on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Earth Eats.
Headlines at the top of every show, keeping us up to date on food happenings. Thanks to Luann Johnson.
Till next time.
Farmers in many areas of Colorado, Nebraska, and Kansas depend on vast mazes of irrigation canals to grow crops where it would otherwise be too dry. 6 months ago, flooding in the northern foothills of Colorado destroyed homes and businesses. It caused millions of dollars in damage and wrecked irrigation infrastructure. And now, Colorado farmers that depend on water are scrambling to repair flood-damaged irrigation networks in time for the crucial spring planting season. Luke Runyon of Harvest Public Media has more.
Last September, the Little Thompson River swelled about a mile away from farmer Mark Nygren's fields outside Johnstown, Colorado.
Until spring runoff hits, I mean, it's just a little creek.
A little creek that turned into a raging river. His neighbors were inundated. Some lost barns, trucks, and livestock. Nygren's farmland was untouched. But that wasn't the end of his worries. Further upstream, the ditches that divert water to his fields were left in tatters.
We solely depend on irrigation. And, you know, in these short water years, it's scary. And then you run into something like this where there might not be any water delivered.
Heavy metal gates that pull water from the river were upended in every stream the flood affected. Without them, the vast network of canals would remain dry. Total damage is in the millions. Renovation of the biggest ditch systems is underway, but farmers are still bracing themselves for a long, tough irrigation season.
Okay, it's missing, but over there on that inlet that goes underneath the railroad tracks is the inlet to a lake.
The heart of the Highland Ditch Company's diversion infrastructure is situated right outside the town of Lyons along the St. Vrain River in Colorado's foothills. Before the flood, much of it was more than a century old. Superintendent Wade Gonzalez says repair work began right after the floodwaters receded.
They got a concrete wall that goes clean down to bedrock now.
And so, it wasn't like that before.
And it wasn't like that. They say that's what takes these out is the water gets underneath them and then it blows them out.
But others weren't so prepared. A recent state report shows more than 40% of irrigation structures in the St. Vrain watershed won't be up and running by May 1st, a critical time for spring planting. 30% of structures along the Big Thompson River are in the same boat. That means some farmers will be forced to forego planting this year and leave their fields fallow. Gonzalez says even those systems that are fully rebuilt, like his own, could face trouble later on.
The thing that makes me nervous now is the debris that's left that isn't cleaned up. What is that going to do? Are we going to end up with the same problem?
A lot of us are kind of in this weird position where we're rooting for snowpack and we're rooting for runoff for the irrigators.
Sean Cronin is director for the St. Vrain and Left-Hand Water Conservancy District.
But we're not rooting for snowpack or runoff for the flood recovery effort.
After years of drought, this season's high snowpack in the South Platte River Basin should be a welcome sight for farmers. But with many irrigation systems still in disrepair, or only with temporary patches, Cronin says this will be the first real test since September's floods.
Time will tell how great a job we did on the temporary recovery. When runoff comes, we'll know what we did well and what we could have done better on.
And farmer Mark Nygren says he's feeling more optimistic than he did in those days just after the floodwaters receded. The systems he relies on are on schedule for their repairs.
We've got everything fixed and we think the ditch is going to run, you know, water. But I think there's going to be things that come up that were unforeseen.
Unforeseen challenges, not just for farmers and their fields, but for the thousands of others still affected 6 months after the flood. Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration focused on issues of food, fuel, and field. More stories like this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. The first question I always ask guests in the Earth Eats studios is what they've had for lunch. It helps set the levels on the microphone. Few people have been as excited about that question as Forrest.
Peppers, small peppers, and some seaweed, and some Doritos, and I also had some carrots. I ate carrots, and that's pretty much it.
That is 6-year-old Forrest Radford Vincent.
F-O-R-E-S-T.
And his mom.
Stacy Radford Vincent, Program and Outreach Manager at Wonder Lab.
She's the coordinator of a program at the Wonder Lab called Kids in the Kitchen. Their first event was called Sugar Sleuths. It gave parents the tools to read ingredients labels and more specifically to recognize all the different names for sugary sweeteners that are included in a lot of processed foods. Stacy said it was also important to give the kids the opportunity to make food themselves.
So instead of just giving the healthy message to the parents and them trying to get the kids to follow through, we wanted to involve the kids as well, because the more the kids are involved with their healthy eating, the more likely that they are to do it. It's also about learning what's in your food, knowing what's in there, and getting kids used to the taste of real food. But we also wanted the kids to learn that there's a difference between a fruit snack and a strawberry, even though they both taste, you know, they both taste good and they're both sweet, but that whole food is better for them.
Forrest was a presenter that day. He demonstrated how to make avocado banana pudding. First, he started with knife safety.
Well, first, let me tell you how to hold it so you don't cut yourself. Keep your fingers away from the knife. Move them as you cut. Then I put it in a bag and everyone mashed it with their fists.
Start back. What are the ingredients?
Avocado and banana. That's the ingredients for it. One slice of each. And then you cut it up into pieces. But you don't like cut it up like mincing it. That's not it. You just cut it up in slices and then put it in the bag and mush it. And then you can eat it. It was really good.
Stacy and her husband got Forrest involved in cooking right away when he was 2 years old.
Basically, when he could stand on a stool, we would let him be in there while we were doing stuff and, you know, let him measure things with the spoon or stir something. And then we progressively have moved up to more advanced things. So he's actually, well, like you heard, he knows the difference between mincing and slicing. We can tell him to chop something or to slice it, and he knows how to do that.
Yeah.
And he's really good with measuring things out, and it's been a great way to teach him some math skills. Yeah. So we have been starting to become familiar with fractions, knowing what 1/2 looks like and 1/4 looks like.
Yeah. 1/8 is 8 slices out of 1.
That's right.
Yeah, very smart, ain't I?
Forrest likes vegetables now, but Stacy knows that sometimes he chooses a donut over, say, an apple. And that's okay. She just hopes that these food values will stay with him when he eventually leaves the house to go be on his own.
As I was growing up, we were real healthy eaters. And when I got to my teenage years, I was not the healthiest eater. But then when I went away to college, all of those things came back to me. And those skills that I could cook, I didn't have to order pizza every night, that I could cook my own meals. And, you know, now we do it out of fun.
They've made butter and cheese at home. With a little prodding, Forrest can recite a basic homemade cheese recipe.
Well, you pretty much need milk.
Some plain yogurt.
Plain yogurt, yeah.
And then what do we put in it to separate it?
Vinegar.
There you go.
And then we pretty much cook it. What? Cool. And it's done. You can eat it.
You know, sometimes you can't control what your kids are going to eat, you know, when they're at school and, you know, they have to make their own choices. But when they're at home, then it's even that much more important to make sure that they're getting those nutrients at home.
And you can stay healthy. Yeah. Do not smoke. That's pretty much another way that you can stay healthy. Try a water cigarette or something like that. That's healthy.
Stacy Radford Vincent and her son Forrest came into the Earth Eats studios. Sarah Elton also encourages her kids to be hands-on with food, so when her 9-year-old asked to make sushi for dinner one night, she took a deep breath.
I tried to remind myself, you know, don't worry that her ratios are a little bit off. It made a big mess. There was rice on the table. We figured out how to clean it up and save the rice so it didn't end up in the garbage. And it was amazing how well it went in the end.
Elton is the author of Starting from Scratch, What You Should Know About Food and Cooking. Her daughter's reaction to that sushi dinner, she said it was the best sushi she'd ever had.
And they get so excited. The pride of an accomplishment really affects the way they experience the meal.
Her book is written for maybe 4th or 5th graders, and it provides as much information as it does inspiration. There's a brief history of tomato sauce and a choose-your-own-adventure for cooking onions. She struggles with picky eaters in her house. Her 6-year-old, for instance, doesn't like onions. And the key is to get them directly involved with their food at home.
I think all parents are always dealing with kids not wanting to eat things, and a great way to get them to get over their aversions is to get them to understand food and to taste the food and to get into the kitchen and prepare all sorts of things.
And then taste lots of different foods. She quotes taste educator Julia Rogers, who said kids are the perfect taste education students because they don't have any preconceptions about what food tastes like.
And I just loved her idea for getting kids to take a second taste of foods, and foods that they like and foods that they don't like, and to slow down and to take a bite of, say, an apple and to really think about it. Like, what does it taste like? What does it feel like in the mouth?
From the basic enjoyment of food to some more advanced topics, Elton says there's nothing too sophisticated for kids. She even describes the concept of terroir.
I also, as an adult, learned that the grass that a cow eats affects the flavor of the cheese that is made. I mean, and I was an adult and researching a book, and that sort of blew my mind. And my kids know it. Like, it's second nature to them, and they get it.
Kids are smart, so she prefers to provide the information and then let them draw their own conclusions. For instance, the book talks about high fructose corn syrup, what it is, how it's used in food, but she doesn't condemn it as bad for you. When she talks about processed foods, it focuses primarily on how the food industry creates flavors.
That said, when it came to BPA, which is bisphenol A, which is a chemical that's in the lining of cans, that has serious health consequences for children, and so kids should know this. That is information that they need to know to be able to make a decision to say, maybe I don't want to eat canned tomatoes that have BPA in the lining. I'm going to try to look for a BPA-free line of tomatoes, and they're hard to find, and they're really expensive, so maybe that kid will then write a letter and say, hey, tomato company, I want to have BPA-free tomatoes because it's healthier for me.
The idea is to just generate conversations about food because, as she says, what we eat says so much about what we believe, and what we cook tells the world who we are.
The more we talk about it and they understand the ingredients of food and how they work and how they cook, the more likely they are to eat and become more adventurous eaters.
That's a perfect way to end. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me on your program.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Sarah Elton is the author of Starting from Scratch. Want to win a copy of this book for a young cook in your life? Connect with us on Twitter to find out how to enter the drawing. Find us at Earth Eats. Coming up, Eric Shedler of Muddy Fork Bakery started off buying ingredients for his bread locally because he wanted to support his fellow small businesses.
Over time, come to find out, not only is it local, but it's quite superior.
We watch him bake some bread in the second half of the show. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Brussels sprouts lovers are going to love you.
Yes, ma'am. We're going to turn everybody into a Brussels sprout lover today. What we've done today is we've blanched them, and blanching means that we've taken some boiling salted water, and we've plunged the raw vegetables into the boiling water, cooked them until they're al dente, and al dente means to the tooth in Italian, and then we've plunged them into cold water, which is called shocking. And you really want to use ice water. That brings the temperature down, keeps the integrity of the vegetable, and keeps them nice and green colored.
There's some chew there.
Yeah. We're going to cook them again, so we don't want to have them overcooked. But I really like that they're crunchy. They're almost like a crudité vegetable. You could eat them cold like this and just dip them into a blue cheese dip. I mean, that'd be a delicious way to enjoy Brussels sprouts. we're going to heat up some oil in a saute pan, and I've got round discs of polenta. And polenta, basically in southern Indiana, it's what we call cornmeal mush. All right, so we want to get a nice brown crust on both sides, so it's crunchy on the exterior and then it's nice and soft on the inside. And what we're going to do is use those on the bottom of the plate with some taleggio on top. And taleggio is a wonderful Italian cheese. It's kind of like a super stinky brie. So if you like brie and you like funky cheeses, you're going to love taleggio. And I don't get it all the time back here in Indiana, so it's fun when I find it, and I wanted to share it with everybody at Earth Eats. Okay, now it's starting to crunch up on that first side. This is one of those things you don't want to rush. The more you move it around, the harder it is to get that nice crust build on the outside. It's kind of like mushrooms. You put them in there, you let them sit there by themselves. Don't try to move them around too much, and your final product will be a lot better.
Hard to not fiddle with your food when you're cooking it.
Right? You always want to check it, look in the bottom. But it's very, very important that you get a nice crust on these. Sprinkle them with just a little grated Parmesan. You can hear that cheese starting to sizzle and stick to the bottom of the tray. And this is the part of the process you really don't want to rush. They should all be able just to kind of slide around. Okay, you know they're ready when you can kind of shake them around in the pan and they don't stick. Okay, I'm going to take this, put this on a side plate. And then with the same pan, I'm going to cook our Brussels sprouts. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to plunge them into the hot water and just to kind of warm them through a little bit. In the meantime, I'm going to put some chopped garlic into the saute pan. And my Brussels sprouts are pretty much hot and there's a little bit of water still on them. Throw those in the pan. Okay, and now I'm going to make up a plate. Okay, so I got a couple of the polenta rounds on the plate. We're going to surround it with some steaming garlicky Brussels sprouts, slice of the taleggio, and just a little bit of chopped herbs. Touch of olive oil to give it a shine. And those are some of the best Brussels sprouts you'll ever have. Go let me know if I'm right.
All right, let's go check this out. It's nice. Whew, this really was a good one. You can experiment with making your own polenta or pick some up from the store. Either way, definitely do not forget that taleggio. That's really the key to this recipe for sure. Get more inspiration for your kitchen adventures on our website, eartheats.org. Muddy Fork Farm and Bakery is truly a family business. Co-owner Katie Zukoff and infant daughter Lita Shedler are hanging out at the bakery as Eric Shedler forms dozens and dozens of balls of dough into loaves that will be baked in their wood fire oven.
It's the microphone. Touch the
microphone. They purchased an undeveloped plot of land 2.5 years ago, just 9 miles outside Bloomington, Indiana, and made themselves a bakery.
Well, that's fine. You can bring it the next week.
Eric is multitasking today by talking to Jenny Haney of Unique Icelandic Sheep Farm in Seymour, Indiana, one of the many local farms from which they buy their ingredients. He's putting in an order for 5 pounds of cornmeal.
All right. Thanks, Jenny. Bye. She grows everything. We don't really know how she has the energy to do it. And she grows a really great variety of spring wheat that we use for our whole wheat breads, and she also grows a rye, and we use both of those in our bread. She has a grinder and grinds it fresh for us every week. We get it from her at the market. If we don't see her at market, we get really nervous.
You're talking to me, we hear this sort of whooshing sound as it looks like you're kneading some...
Shaping the rounds, the sourdough rounds. I'm doing two at a time. It's a technique I've been working on that they use in Germany.
These rounds will get fired in the wood oven that's fueled by waste wood from a local sawmill. Originally, working with local businesses and buying ingredients from local farmers was an ideological decision.
Over time, come to find out, not only is it local, but it's quite superior. The flour that we get, it's freshly ground, so it improves the flavor. The wheat that we get in particular is a pretty high protein flour. It makes really wonderful bread, especially in our brick oven. It makes a really strong dough, so we're able to add more water to the dough than you would typically add, which works really well in the brick oven. It makes a lot of steam inside the loaf when it hits the hot brick, and it just springs up beautifully. We're able to get a really light loaf out of 100% whole grain flour.
Before they built their commercial kitchen, they made bread out of their home. Thanks to a law that's been on the books in Indiana since 2009, home-based vendors can prepare non-potentially hazardous food products in their home kitchens and sell them at farmers markets and roadside stands. So Eric and Katie made a 10-week commitment to bake bread to sell at the area winter market.
I remember the first day that I baked, I didn't finish until 2 in the morning, and I said, I don't know if I can do this again. And I was only making maybe 50 loaves.
Now, on his 2 baking days every week, he produces loaves for 30 to 35 bread subscribers and local restaurants, as well as some 150 loaves to sell at markets in the area. That involves being on his feet for 10 to 12 hours. They also make some sweet treats.
We call it a butternut squash spice roll. And it's made with local butternut squash. And we actually are able to sell them year-round because butternut squash keeps so well. We get it from local farmers in the fall, and then it keeps throughout the winter and spring and even into the summer until the next harvest comes. And it has, in addition to cinnamon, it has nutmeg, clove, ginger in the brown sugar swirl. It also has orange zest in the dough. It's the orange that I smell right away. This is delicious. Thank you. I don't know if I can really taste a squash so much.
Squash adds a moistness to it.
And color.
Okay, so I can maybe say that this cinnamon roll is maybe healthy for me?
I would say so. I think it is.
Katie Zukoff and Eric Shedler of Muddy Fork Bakery. Sad news from them last week. Their bakery burned down. They do plan to rebuild, but it'll be a long process. We'll provide a link for how you can help support their efforts. Find that at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Sarah Elton, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Stacey Radford Vincents, Eric Shedler, Katie Zukoff, and everyone at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all 3 locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, 1 block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. We're better when you listen. So thanks for tuning in. For Earth Eats, I'm Annie Corrigan.